consider yourself pro-life? Turns out you're far from alone. A new push for a parental consent law in Saskatchewan, a report from the Manning Networking Conference in Ottawa, and more on the law school debate at Trinity Western University.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
If you're pro-life, you've been led to believe that you're in the minority in Canada. But it's amazing what a few Freedom of Information requests directed at the Privy Council office in Ottawa can show. Pro-life blogger Patricia Maloney has filed a lot of these requests. The most recent one was for all the correspondence directed to the Prime Minister's office regarding Motion 312. You may recall that motion from last year. It came from MP Stephen Woodworth. It was looking for a committee to review the criminal code provision that declares someone isn't fully human until they're fully born. The motion was defeated in Parliament 203-91, but that vote result clearly wasn't reflective of the correspondence the Prime Minister received on the issue. Maloney's FOI request shows that Stephen Harper got 1,054 letters on this. All but 22 of them were in favor of Woodworth's motion. That's 98% support. And this isn't the first time that Maloney's work has yielded these kinds of results. An earlier request for correspondence on a bill to penalize men who coerce women into getting abortions had 97% support, and Mark Warrow's motion last year to have Parliament condemn the practice of sex-selective abortion was favored by 99.7% of those who wrote in. Maloney says Parliament's repeated refusal to even deal with these issues shows, and I'm quoting from her blog here, a Prime Minister completely out of step with the Canadian public he supposedly serves. We've got the link to her blog up on our website. Speaking of support for the pro-life position, Angus Reid recently released a poll showing more than half of Canadians, 55%, support the idea that a teenage girl shouldn't be allowed to get an abortion without her parents' permission. That poll is part of the background of a new campaign launched in Saskatchewan last month by WeNeedALaw.ca. That's the explicitly pro-life arm of ARPA. Director Mike Schutten appeared on Brian Lilly's Byline program on the Sun TV network recently to talk about that campaign, and Brian's leadoff question was telling.
Pretty standard that you have to be 14 to get a job, 16 to drive, 18 to use a tanning bed, or 18 to get a tattoo or piercing in lots of places. But abortion, there's none. Mike, why did you decide to go in this route?
Well, when we looked around the world, we noticed that most jurisdictions offered and had in place already parental consent for abortion.
So the plan for this is to target Saskatchewan right now. Is this an idea that will be picked up by other groups or spearheaded by your group in other provinces?
The reason why we're in Saskatchewan is because groups there approached us and said, look, we like what you're doing. We like your mission. We want to work together. And we want to work together for families in our province. Since we've launched, certainly other provinces have approached us, and we'll have to assess those requests as we go forward.
We Need a Law has launched a postcard campaign in which Saskatchewan residents are being urged to send pre-printed postcards to their local members of the legislature. The initial print run of 15,000 postcards has already been used up. They're printing more, and if you're in Saskatchewan and you'd like one of these cards, you can email Nikki at weneedalaw.ca. That's Nikki, N-I-K-I, at weneedalaw.ca. One of Canada's largest gatherings of conservative-minded people was held in Ottawa on the first weekend of this month. The annual Manning Networking Conference drew more than 800 small-c conservatives from across the country. Among the featured speakers, columnist Mark Stein, Saskatchewan Premier Brad Wall, and federal politicians like Jason Kenney and Jim Prentice. ARPA and We Need a Law also had booths there with four staff members. ARPA's Mark Penninga says it was kind of a mixed event in some respects.
We were able to engage on quite a few of the policy reports that we had brought there, issues like Aboriginal affairs and prostitution, which was a hot topic there. But yeah, on the other hand, it was somewhat striking, even disappointing, to see just how little consideration was given to God at this conference. And by that I mean, even though Preston Manning himself is a Christian, and many of the leaders of the movement there are Christians, there was no prayer, almost no inquiry into the spiritual roots of current issues. I realize that a big C conservative party is secular, and it has little regard for looking at politics from a faith-based perspective, but it was still disappointing to see how true that was also in the broader movement. So, yeah, disappointing at that, and yet encouraging to see that it wasn't just ARPA and We Need a Law. There was some other good groups like the Ezra Institute, Institute of Marriage and Family Canada, and CARDIS that was there as well to hopefully shed some light to these issues.
Also from that conference, a commitment from at least one federal cabinet minister to the notion of income splitting. The general idea behind that is to save families money on their tax bill by allowing a high-earning spouse to drop to a lower tax bracket, transferring some of their income to the other spouse. This was something the Conservatives promised in the last federal election campaign. Since then, the finance minister has backed away from the promise, but Employment Minister Jason Kenney reiterated his support at the conference, saying he still thinks it's a good idea.
The single most important factor that leads to successful employment and economic opportunities for people is whether they come from a stable family. And we need to support moms and dads who make sacrifices for their kids.
He said the Conservatives will keep their platform commitments, adding the party is committed to tax relief for Canadian families. And finally, the battle over Trinity Western University's proposal to start a law school is ongoing. A number of liberal groups across the country have lobbied the Federation of Law Societies of Canada to refuse accreditation for the new law school. The grounds? Trinity's so-called community covenant, which says, among other things, that sexual intimacy should be reserved for marriage between one man and one woman. That, of course, precludes homosexual unions and premarital sex, and that's what's got the Liberals complaining about it. The Federation has ruled on the issue now, giving the school preliminary approval to start training lawyers and leaving it up to provincial law societies to decide whether they want to recognize the degrees handed out by the school. Trinity President Bob Kuhn is on the road now trying to convince those law societies to grant the recognition. He was in Halifax recently telling the Nova Scotia Barristers Society that it would be unfair for the group to deny accreditation to Trinity students. Kuhn, who's a lawyer himself, said not recognizing the degrees from Trinity would be, quote, an audacious example of prejudice. He urged the group to view the issue from the perspective of lawyers and not as what he called personal representatives of any ideological viewpoints. A decision on the issue is expected, in Nova Scotia at least, by the end of April. No word yet on the timing or process for other law societies across the country.
God and government. It's not often you hear those two words in the same sentence. But ARPA is getting ready to sponsor its annual God and Government Conference. The event will be held from May 5th to 7th in Ottawa. There will be lots of education, including Andrea Morozek on engaging the media, Jason Kenney on what is and isn't a proper role for government, and lots of chances to interact with like-minded people at various breakout sessions. You can also attend the Parliamentary Prayer Breakfast and meet and encourage members of Parliament as they fulfill their roles in Ottawa. More details, including costs, registration, and more, at arpacanada.ca.
Time for the interview portion of the program. In studio with me right now is Mike Schutten from weneedalaw.ca. Mike, you sent out an email earlier this month with the subject line, "Is a sex selective abortion bill imminent?" The very fact that you're asking the question leads me to believe you think there might be something to this. Are you optimistic something could be coming down the pipeline? And if so, what do you base that on?
Well, Al, we have had more and more news stories surrounding this issue of sex selective abortions or gendercide, specifically since 2012, when CBC, the national broadcaster, did a private investigation, found out that ultrasounds were being used to detect the gender of the preborn child for the purposes of aborting, if it wasn't a preferred gender. Since that time, Mark Warawa, a member of Parliament from Langley, BC, put forward a motion that would have seen the House of Commons condemn this practice from happening in Canada. Unfortunately, that motion did not even make it into the House of Commons. But since then, more often, we're starting to see this issue raised. So it is becoming something that is also touching us here in Canada. We know it's a global problem, specifically in countries like China, Korea, as well as India. We're also starting to see it happen here in Canada.
I note that the college that regulates obstetrics and gynecology has come out with a position with respect to ultrasounds for the purpose of determining gender. Is that also part of your optimism?
Certainly. With the increased availability of technology and as things improve in this regard, we're seeing the misuse of technology and ultrasounds are being misused in this way. So more and more doctors' organizations are recognizing that, and they're calling on our elected representatives to bring in regulations regarding their use so that they're not misused in this manner.
Now, we've had this, you know, brought up before. You mentioned Mark Warrow's attempt to have the vote condemning the abortions. We've also had private members' bills against coercing somebody to have an abortion, another one asking for a review of the criminal code on human life not officially starting till after birth. All of those motions and bills were either defeated or didn't even make it to a vote. Largely, one suspects, at the direction of the Prime Minister's office, because Stephen Harper keeps saying he doesn't want to be seen as reopening this debate. Is there any hope at all, if a bill on sex selective abortions is introduced, that things might go differently this time?
Certainly, I do think so. I think this is where a majority of Canadians have common ground. There's many people who I speak with on a regular basis who would identify as pro-choice, pro-choice for certain reasons. But this topic of sex selective abortion really gets them, and they get excited and passionate about the fact that something needs to be done about this. There's no way that we should be using our wide open access to abortion for this purpose. That is the termination of female preborn children just because they're girls.
Okay, sir. We shall all discuss with this, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you about it again.
Thanks, Al. Thank you.
There's a Supreme Court of Canada hearing coming up that could have a big impact on supporters of private and religious schools across the country. It's simply known as the Loyola case. Loyola, a Jesuit Catholic high school in Quebec, which had applied to the provincial government there basically for permission to teach that province's ethics and religious culture program, part of the provincial curriculum, from an expressly Catholic perspective. The province refused that request. Loyola went to court. They won the first round, but the province appealed, and they won the second round at Quebec's Court of Appeal. Now the Supreme Court of Canada has agreed to hear yet another appeal of the case, this one filed by the school. ARPA has been given legal status as an intervener in the case. Our legal counsel, Andre Scouten, who's in Ottawa, will be arguing the case, and he's with me in studio now. Andre, first of all, is there any further background to the case that people need to know?
The big thing that we need to keep in mind is that this is not just a case that's going to affect Loyola. It's a case that affects broader Christian schools across the country. Because Loyola has taken this case to the Supreme Court, that means whatever the Supreme Court says on this issue is going to have implications and ramifications for the provinces, all the provinces. So we shouldn't dismiss this case as something particular to Quebec, but rather this is something that has an effect for all of us.
You're in the final stages of putting submission together on this. I don't know how much you can talk about legal strategy, but at least in broad strokes, can you give us a bit of an idea of the basic issues and points of law that you'll be entering into the record?
Sure. First of all, ARPA decided that because this is an issue that affects so many of our Christian schools, that we would build a coalition. So we built a coalition representing 313 independent elementary and secondary schools from across the country that are expressly Christian. And so together we're representing one voice there at the Supreme Court. And the arguments that we want to make is basically this: freedom of religion, protected by Section 2A of the Charter, includes a protection for parents to be able to teach their children from their own confessional worldview, from a Christian confessional worldview, from an expressly Reformed Christian worldview, or for those parents in Canada who aren't Christian to teach from their own worldview, Buddhist, Sikh, Muslim, atheist, whatever. And then the second point is that these independent schools should be seen as an extension of that parental home or that parental authority. We shouldn't see them as some cold corporate entity that has no religious reality or identity, but rather they are an extension of the family home, an extension of the parental rights.
It's interesting to me that this is going on in Quebec. Of course, they've had the discussion about their values charter in the last 6 months or so. A lot of folks say that's really part of a huge trend towards secularization there.
Yeah.
Quebec, probably more than any other place in Canada, has very deep Catholic cultural roots. I mean, as recently as the 60s, the Catholic Church was essentially their vital statistics branch. You didn't get a birth certificate in Quebec, you got a baptismal certificate. The notion of religion is being completely privatized there. Religious belief and practice, according to the Values Charter, can only be exercised in private, with no place at all in the public square. I know the pendulum swings, but this is a pretty wild swing, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. It's a total swing in the opposite direction. If you look at the way they push secularism in Quebec, it's very religious. They speak as if secularism is some sort of neutral worldview, but it's not at all. They insist that religion, for example, is purely a cultural phenomenon, so that right away degrades religion. They compare the Christian Godhead, the Trinity, Jesus Christ, with other mythical creatures like Hercules or Thor, relativizing religion, trivializing religion.
So do we have a date for the hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's March 24. It's going to be the oral hearing. We file our written legal arguments. It's called a factum. And once that's filed, we'll find out soon after whether or not we have permission to also present oral arguments to the court on the 24th.
So that was the other question I was going to ask, is will you actually be appearing before the court, or is this a case of just filing some papers?
All interveners, there's 11 interveners, will be filing their written arguments, and then the court is going to determine after they've seen the written arguments who they want to hear from, and they would give up to a maximum of 10 minutes for the various interveners to speak.
And, I mean, I know it's hard to predict, but given normal practice, how long before we get
anywhere between 6 months and 18 months is kind of the trend. So I'm hoping we see something in the fall, but it might be, depending on how the court behind the scenes is dealing with the issue as they wrestle with it, it could be much longer than that.
Andre, thank you very much for your time, sir.
You bet. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
This has been Lighthouse News, shining the light of biblical truth on today's current events. Production Manager, Mark Peninga. Technical Director, Nate Bosher. Questions or feedback, email info@arpacandidate.ca. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for another edition of Lighthouse News.